Hello and welcome to this MDU podcast. Today, the Mental Capacity Act. The Mental Capacity Act 2005 came fully into force on the 1st of October 2007 in England and Wales. Many of its provisions are based on existing common law principles and good practice in the treatment and care of patients over 16 years of age who cannot make treatment decisions for themselves. The Act provides a legal framework to help healthcare professionals to ensure that patients who lack capacity participate as much as possible in any decisions made on their behalf, and that these are made in their best interests. The Act, which applies in England and Wales, also introduces new independent mental capacity advocates, lasting powers of attorney, a statutory basis for advanced decisions concerning healthcare, and the creation of a new court of protection. In addition to the Act itself, there's a detailed code of practice providing guidance for doctors and other health professionals, which they're obliged to have regard to when working with or caring for adults lacking capacity. In Scotland, the earlier Adults with Incapacity Scotland Act 2001 introduced similar but not identical provisions. Here to explain lasting powers of attorney, the law on advanced decisions, sometimes called living wills, and other aspects of the Act is Dr. Sally Old, a member of the MDU's expert medico-legal advisory team. Hello, Sally.
Hello.
First, what are the main principles behind the Act?
Five principles underpin the Act and are a good starting point for considering how to approach care for patients who might lack capacity. First, a person must be assumed to have capacity unless it is established that they do not. Second, a person is not to be treated as unable to make a decision unless all practicable steps have been taken without success to help him make a decision. Third, a person is not to be treated as unable to make a decision merely because the decision appears to be unwise. Fourth, an act done or decision made under the Act for or on behalf of the person who lacks capacity must be in the patient's best interests. Fifth, before a decision is made, you should consider if the same purpose can effectively be achieved in a way that's less restrictive of the person's rights and freedom of action.
So how do you judge capacity?
Well, first of all, an adult must be assumed to have capacity unless it is established otherwise. And you have to consider all practical ways in which someone can be helped to make a decision. For example, making the person feel at ease or presenting information using simple language or visual aids. Then there is a two-stage test for capacity. First, does the person have an impairment of the mind or brain, or is there some sort of disturbance affecting the way their mind or brain works? Second, if so, does that impairment or disturbance mean that the person is unable to make the decision at the time it needs to be made?
So how do you assess someone's ability to make the decision?
The questions you need to ask are, can the patient understand the information relevant to the decision, including information about potential consequences of accepting or rejecting treatment, retain that information, use it to make the decision, and communicate the decision by talking, sign language, or any other means? If the answer to any of these four questions is no, the patient cannot make the decision. It is important to remember that capacity is not an all-or-nothing phenomenon. Capacity may vary depending on the complexity of the decision and may fluctuate with time. So a patient may be competent to make some decisions, but unable to decide about more complex treatment options.
I suppose the next issue is how you judge what is in the best interests of a patient who lacks capacity.
Yes, there are a number of things to consider when looking at best interests. First, you must consider whether it is likely that the patient will at some time have capacity to decide for themselves, and if so, when. It may be possible to defer a decision about treatment until the patient regains capacity. As far as it is practicable, patients must be encouraged to participate in any treatment decisions affecting them. Where life-sustaining treatment is involved, decisions must not be motivated by a desire to bring about the death of the patient. You must consider, if possible, the patient's past and present wishes, their feelings, beliefs and values that would have influenced their decision if they had capacity, and anything else that might influence their decision if they were able to make it for themselves. If possible, you must also take into account the views of people named by the patient as someone to be consulted, carers and others interested in their welfare, those appointed under a lasting power of attorney, and deputies appointed by the court. Decisions must not be made merely on the basis of a patient's age, appearance, condition, or any aspect of behaviour which might lead to unjustified assumptions about their best interests. Lastly, keep a record of how you reached the decision about their best interests, setting out the reasons, who was consulted, and all the factors taken into account.
The Act establishes lasting powers of attorney. What's their role?
People who have been given lasting powers of attorney have authority to make decisions about an individual's welfare, property and affairs, depending on what powers they've been given. But there are a number of restrictions. For example, powers in respect of the patient's welfare do not automatically extend to refusing, carrying out or continuing life-sustaining treatment unless the patient expressly gave authority to that effect.
So, how should you respond to someone with early Alzheimer's disease who wants to give his wife power of attorney so she can make decisions about his treatment when he loses capacity?
The creation of an LPA is a legal question, and you may want to recommend that the patient seek his own legal advice. It may be helpful to explain that a personal welfare LPA can be general, covering all aspects of personal welfare, or specific, relating to particular aspects of welfare or healthcare, and must be registered with the Office of the Public Guardian, OPG, in order to be effective. The GMC advises in its guidance, Consent, Patients and Doctors Making Decisions Together, that you should encourage patients with serious conditions like this to make plans for the future. You would need to make a record of any such discussions, and very important, ensure that the whole team is informed about any decisions made. Patients can place restrictions or conditions on the LPA and set out guidance to be considered when making decisions about their best interests. If a patient makes a later advanced decision, refusing a particular form of treatment, the attorney cannot override it. GPs may be asked by patients to sign the LPA as a certificate provider, which means that they have to confirm that they have discussed the contents of the LPA with the patient when the attorney was not present, that the purpose of the LPA and the scope of authority under it are properly understood, and that no undue pressure or fraud is suspected.
The Act refers to advanced decisions. Is that the same as a living will?
Advanced decisions enable someone with capacity, who is 18 or over, to refuse specific medical treatment at some stage in the future when they might not be able to refuse or consent to that particular treatment. Advanced decisions, advanced directives and living wills all mean the same, but the Act just refers to advanced decisions, so that is the best term to use. Advanced decisions can be made verbally or in writing, but if the decision is a refusal of life-sustaining treatment, it must be in writing and comply with other conditions set out in the Act. Regular review of an advanced decision is advisable, but the fact that it was made a long time ago does not render it invalid. Any alteration or amendment to an advanced decision should be recorded in the notes.
What happens if the clinical team aren't sure if the advanced decision applies in the patient's particular circumstances?
I would suggest that members who have these concerns contact the MDU for specific advice. However, in general terms, the Act contains a measure of protection for health professionals who are not liable for providing treatment if they have good reason to doubt the validity or applicability of an advanced decision. Equally, no liability is incurred if those responsible for care withhold or withdraw treatment because they have good reason to believe that a valid and applicable advanced decision exists. In cases of doubt, the courts can determine whether an advanced decision exists, is valid and applicable to treatment. Pending the declaration of the court, nothing should prevent provision of life-sustaining treatment or anything believed to be necessary to prevent a serious deterioration in the patient's condition.
Patients may want to discuss making an advanced decision with their doctor. If so, what should you do?
patients will probably seek medical advice to find out more about conditions they have or may develop, potential treatments and their implications, so they can make an informed decision whether or not to refuse such treatment in particular circumstances, just as if they were consenting to any other treatment.
If a patient with, say, motor neurone disease does not want artificial hydration and nutrition if he becomes unable to eat and drink himself, could these treatments be refused using an advanced decision?
Yes, but an advanced decision to refuse life-sustaining treatment must be in writing and signed in the presence of a witness who must also sign the document. If the patient is unable to write, someone else can write it down for them and then direct someone else to sign it on their behalf in their presence. Such an advanced decision must also include a clear, specific, written statement that it applies to the specific treatment, even if their life is at risk.
What happens if a patient who's made an advanced decision refusing consent for further treatment would have a reasonable chance of recovery if given treatment?
Again, we would advise members who have concerns about this sort of situation to seek specific advice from us. However, in general terms, if an advance decision is applicable and valid, it must be respected, even if you might not consider the decision to be in the patient's best interests. An advance decision will not be applicable to the treatment in question if it is not the treatment specified in the advance decision, the circumstances are different from those set out in the advance decision, the patient has acted in a way that is clearly inconsistent with the advance decision, or there are reasonable grounds for believing that there have been changes in circumstances which would have affected a patient's decision. If in doubt, the matter can be referred to the courts, and pending a decision, treatment can be provided.
Is it true that I could now face imprisonment if I fail to carry out a patient's request to help them die under the terms of their advance decision?
No. An advance decision cannot make you do anything illegal, and the law relating to euthanasia and assisted suicide remains unchanged. A person can only make an advance decision to refuse treatment, not to request that his or her life be ended.
Where a patient has made an advance decision but then appoints an LPA, which one takes precedence?
If a patient who has made an advance decision then creates a personal welfare LPA, the advance decision is invalid if the LPA covers decisions about the same treatment.
Can we look at another example? If a severely disabled patient is found unconscious at home after taking a paracetamol overdose, and I was unaware that a relative had a copy of his advance decision refusing life-sustaining treatment, would I be legally liable if I treated him?
Depending on how much time you have, you may be able to find out if such an advance decision exists. But if there is no time even to make inquiries and you have to proceed in the patient's best interests, you will not be liable for providing treatment. Emergency treatment should not be delayed for healthcare professionals to look for an advance decision if there is no clear indication that one exists.
What are independent mental capacity advocates?
The Independent Mental Capacity Advocate Service, or IMCAS, came into operation in April 2007. IMCAS were created to provide support to people who lack capacity to make important decisions, where there are no friends or family members available to consult. Whenever an NHS body is proposing to provide serious medical treatment, such as chemotherapy or major surgery, for patients lacking capacity, they must instruct and consult an IMCA. The IMCA should represent the patient in discussions to work out whether a proposed decision is in the patient's best interests.
In an emergency, with no time to arrange for an IMCA, should urgent treatment go ahead?
Yes, if it's in the patient's best interest to do so. But an IMCA would need to be instructed for any serious medical treatment which follows, or if there is likely to be a stay in hospital for more than 28 days or other accommodation for more than 8 weeks.
What happens if there are suspicions that an attorney is not acting in the best interests of the patient, or, worse still, is suspected of abuse?
The Act creates a new criminal offence of ill treatment or willful neglect of a person who lacks or is believed to lack capacity. If convicted, people can be imprisoned and/or fined. As in any situation where a doctor has good reason to believe that a patient is being abused, he or she has a professional duty to report it to the relevant authorities. Concerns about an attorney can be reported to the Office of the Public Guardian immediately, and the OPG may direct a Court of Protection visitor to visit an attorney.
Thank you, Dr. Sally Old. In summary, the Mental Capacity Act 2005 provides the legal framework for acting and making decisions on behalf of patients who lack capacity to make decisions for themselves. Doctors providing treatment for adults who lack capacity to make decisions about their treatment and care must comply with the Act. The same rules apply whether the decisions are life-changing events or everyday matters. As advanced decisions, LPAs and IMCAs are becoming more commonplace, so all doctors need to know how the Act's provisions work in practice. If you come across an unfamiliar situation or are unsure how best to proceed, don't hesitate to call the MDU advice line on 0800 716 646. That's 0800 716 646. Expert advice is just a phone call away. More information about the Mental Capacity Act can be found at our website, themdu.com. Once again, thank you, Dr. Sally Old, and thank you for listening.